Motor City, Detroit, Michigan. It's the Camaro C28.com podcast with your host Chris Frezza and Jason Debler. Strap in. It's the Camaro C28.com podcast on the air.
That's right. We're back for part two of our podcast, episode number 94.
That's right.
We still have our special guest in the studio, Micah Jones from General Motors.
That's right, interior designer extraordinaire.
Hello, everyone.
That's right.
And if you missed last week's episode, you got to download it and check it out.
Yeah.
Because we covered a lot of stuff, and we're going to continue.
It's a prerequisite.
Yeah. Yeah, otherwise you're going to just miss all the goods.
Yeah.
But we got more goods here.
Yeah.
We're going to just pick up right where we left off. As we mentioned in the first portion of this in podcast number 93, that this is probably going to run a little long, which is, is quite all right. No voicemails. No big deal.
We'll get to those next week.
Yeah. So, yeah. Don't forget to get your voicemails in. You know the number by now. So, on to the good stuff, though.
Yeah, Micah, tell us how you got involved with design. What started it all? How did you get into this?
I have to say, my older brother.
Yeah.
Got me started on it. Ever since I was in kindergarten, I've been sketching cars. And my brother was always drawing these futuristic egg cars, and we drew a lot of cars in church too. You know, the little pamphlets with the little stubby pencils. We just sketch cars all, you know, And so it actually wasn't until I was in probably 8th or 9th grade that I found out that people got paid to draw cars. Because I grew up in Milwaukee, which is a little ways away from Detroit, so it's away from the auto industry. I never really heard of car designers. But yeah, I found out people got paid to draw cars, and I thought, crap, I've been doing that my whole life. And boy, it'd be awesome to make a living doing that. So I was lucky enough to grow up in an area that had a great high school with a really great art program. So I've been sketching, you know, pretty much my whole life, and I've been into cars my whole life too. So it's a great marriage of art and cars, and I always loved motorsports and engines and speed and all that stuff.
Cool.
So when you were
in heaven.
So when you were sketching egg-shaped futuristic cars in church, you probably had no idea that you'd eventually be the designer of the interior for the next for the fifth generation Camaro.
I had no idea,
And then, as we talked about in last week's episode, of course, you started working on it in 2005, and then next thing you know, and do they come up and say, "Hey, you know, out of all the you know designs that have come in,
you're a winner.
You're it." Ta-da! Ding, 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 ding. And then, you know, Bob Barker comes out and sticks his microphone in your face. And
no,
how's it work?
No, it certainly isn't like they spin a wheel of names and it lands on mine. If only it was that simple. It's always a competition. So what happens is all the designers who are involved in the project from all the advanced studios and some production studios, they put together proposals, and there's a whole first round of reviews with executive design management, and we get some feedback on what kind of things the big boss man wants to see. For example, I want to see more retro or more futuristic or a little more contemporary, or I like that design element. And luckily, my design seemed to strike the right blend of characteristics, and so my design was picked, my theme was picked. But another designer also had some great work too, so we tag teamed on together, and with guidance from management, we just kind of honed in on a design that I think strikes the right balance and really appeals to a lot of people.
Wow.
Well, it certainly left an impact on people, both positive and a little bit negative here and there, and not to,
bound to
put you right on the hot seat there.
Design is very subjective.
Oh, it is. I think overall, for the most part, everything came out great, but there's a lot of, you know, that there's the Camaro enthusiast group is pretty passionate, and they'll fight.
What?
You know, yeah.
Die hard.
Who told you that?
What? I wasn't expecting that.
It wasn't so much criticism on the design itself, but criticism on the materials that it was made of.
Mm-hmm.
Now, did you have the materials in mind? We talked about that you had to work with the engineers to produce it. But did you have that in mind, or does that get handed off in materials and in color and everything?
Well, actually, we've got a color and trim studio with people who really specialize in keeping up with the latest trends and keeping up with latest technology and materials. And so we had a color and trim designer assigned to the car. And so designers work with the color and trim designer and basically kind of hone it down to what we think is most appropriate and right for the car.
I think one of the biggest criticisms in the interior is the fact that there's a lot of reflective material in the interior. And the problem with having a concept vehicle is that people think that that is indeed exactly 100% from top to bottom going to be what's in the production version. Mm-hmm. Now, can you, without losing your job, comment on the material and how similar it may or may not be in the production version?
Sure. Show cars tend to be a little over the top. You know, we're really going for glamour. We're really going for impact. And so that's why we chose to do a pretty bold interior in terms of its contrast and its color and even the shininess of the metal. The coupe, you may be referring to specifically, where the coupe has got a lot of polished aluminum in it, and it's really shiny. I mean, it's really just blinging. the convertible, on the other hand, has been toned down a bit more. The metal has been smoked a bit darker. It's got a satin finish on it, and really, in my opinion, has a much more contemporary and upscale feel to it. But the initial coupe was definitely over the top.
People agree.
Yeah. That brings me to my next topic, and that is the convertible.
Mm-hmm.
How far along did they come to you and say, hey, guess what? We're gonna do a convertible for next year's show. So we need you to incorporate your design, but in a convertible.
Mm.
And how long did that process take? And what were the challenges and differences that the coupe to convertible interior share?
Okay. You know, after the coupe debuted, I thought, well, that's it. I'm probably just going to work on the production car, and that'll be my job for a while. It wasn't more than 3 weeks after the coupe came out that they're like, okay, I think we're going to do a convertible.
About three weeks after.
Huh?
Like, what are we going to do for next year? We'll probably do a convertible. And I was like, oh boy, I guess that means me again. And at first, I was like, I kind of want to dedicate myself to the production car. But no, doing the convertible didn't eat up that much time because a lot of it was a redo.
Okay.
But there was definitely a lot of unique things as well. And getting to that, obviously the biggest difference with the convertible is you have no top. And it also generally appeals to a different customer. And that's what we really wanted to hone in on. There's kind of the cosmetic and emotional changes that we made to it, mostly in color and trim. And there's also the functional changes. So, you know, on the cosmetic side of it, we wanted to be really bold and really really confident, because generally most convertible owners are very confident. And so the interior colors, you know, express that. I wanted it to be very, very modern as well, too, and a little bit more upscale. Like I talked about, the metal finish and then the pearl white accent panel on there gives a really fresh feel. And then there's the functional changes with the convertible. And namely, with the convertible top, you've got to package a full mechanism mm-hmm. for it. You know, granted, the show car didn't have a functioning top, we still wanted it to be pretty realistic. So we had to make the seats a little bit narrower in the back. And the console is shortened a bit to give you some more knee room. Obviously, the quarter trim is a new piece, so the design's been refined a lot more than the coupe. And the tonneau cover had to be designed, and the interaction of the tonneau cover with the quarter trim and the seats and all that kind of interface had to be really thought about.
So you're not just dash; you're also dash seats, center console, and then the interior actually starts to blend into the exterior when it comes into a convertible.
Yeah,
the tonneau cover becomes the exterior, and that was something that was part of your responsibilities as well.
Yep, my responsibility and the exterior designer's responsibility. You know, whenever you get into a convertible, there's always that kind of middle ground. The middle ground, you know, where the inside and the outside meet and have to interface. And that was really quite a challenge, you know, who's responsible for what and who has the power to trump the other one. So mm-hmm. it was kind of interesting. You know, in the beginning, I had all kinds of designs on the tonneau cover, and perhaps like the rear headrest have like a little blister that blends in the tonneau cover, like a speedster. We sketched all kinds of variations on that, but in the end, we just thought it should be real simple. You know, we don't want the tonneau cover to be too distracting, so we just went with a good, simple shape and, you know, really refined the surface and made sure that tonneau cover surface really spoke with the exterior and came across very, very refined.
And speaking of the exterior, how much interaction did you have to do with the exterior guys? Is it an interior group and an exterior group, and they somehow meet in the middle later, or is it from the very start, you got to work off each other and take each other's situation into consideration when you're working on your thing? I mean, how much interaction is it with the exterior?
The interaction kind of is kind of on and off. You know, in the very beginning, you know, it was kind of decided that, that the first generation Camaro was the most influential. So it wouldn't make any sense to have a first gen inspired exterior and a second gen inspired interior. So in that regard, we had to be in the, on the right page. And then we started kind of designing around that basic parameter. And then as the interior got a little bit more developed, then we really wanted to consider the exterior lines even more and make sure that the surfaces related to each other. And even like while we were fabricating the car, we had the interior panels in there. We thought, you know, those bulges over the gauges, they look a little bit too soft compared to the exterior. So we went there and modified that and gave a little bit more attention.
So there's you guys really have to communicate.
Very interesting how, you know, all that comes together.
I don't think very many people think about that when it comes to designing a car, especially one that's as high high visibility as this one. So and you still work with the exterior guys throughout the project, nonstop.
Yeah,
which is good, and that's why, you know, like you said, the interior's got to be complement the exterior and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. I'm really excited about the Camaro because it's basically what I call a double punch car, where the interior is just as strong as the exterior. You know, there's a lot of show cars and production cars out there that one falls kind of short, and typically it's the interior, unfortunately. But with this car, I'm just so really, really thrilled and pleased that the end result turned out so harmonious and so holistic.
Yeah, it did. The interior doesn't look out of place at all. I guess if there's one thing that people are concerned with, and if you can talk about this, mm-hmm. is the visibility of the gauges, being able to read the gauges. Now, we've tried to set people at ease on just on a lot of things like this, and then and that's one of them. They say, "Oh, the hell can you read the gauges?
It's metal on metal."
Yeah, you know, I don't know. You can't even read the numbers because they're so tall. And can you confirm that they're not going to be like that?
The gauges will be clear.
Okay. So everybody can relax.
You heard it here first.
It's going to be, you know, and like my argument is that, you know, General Motors or any car company wouldn't put out a car that would make the gauges hard to read. But yeah, right. Hey, you know, like we say that people that are concerned about it, they raise a big stink. That just means they're passionate about the car.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. And we appreciate that kind of enthusiasm and that kind of concern, too. You know, I don't take that as criticism in a bad way, like, oh, no, I really messed up, you know. We know that these things are issues, and we're going to address them. And, yeah, quite frankly, the gauges are going to look dynamite, too. Even far more detailed than the show car gauges. You know, the show car ones are very simple and very dramatic in their section. You know, they're super deep. The production ones are a lot more clear, and they've got really cool modern graphics on the gauge face. Nice. It's going to be really exciting.
Good. Nice. Good. Chris and I have tremendous hopes for this car. We have no doubts, no concerns, and no worries. We've pretty much met just about everybody on the team at one point or another, and everybody we talk to, this isn't a job to them. You know, this is their passion.
Oh yeah, We want to make something that we want to drive, that we can feel proud to stand by and proud to sell and proud to talk about.
Yeah, and that's kind of why you're here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So let's shift gears, no pun intended. Oh God, you know, what are you doing when you're not sitting there with your pen and tablet and all that? What kind of projects do you have going on, you know, for fun?
Oh boy, well my hobby is kart racing. I actually have a little 125cc two stroke kart that I race with. Not exactly your run of the mill rental kart. Does about 100 miles an hour, and so I do that every couple weeks.
Nice. Have you ever been down to cart to cart?
Oh. Yeah, that's kind of child's play, but
yeah,
I like to warm up there and practice my passing skills.
We've got a champion kart racer on our board, Jordan Musser.
Yeah,
Our board forever. Yeah, and he may be listening, so we should put you guys head to head. See what you do. What else do you do? You know, you do any fun racing other than karts, like real car racing?
Yeah. I actually do some rallycross racing and some autocross sometimes. But also, one thing I'm really excited about is at the end of this year in fall, myself and a few other GM designers are going to be entering a race called the 24 Hours of Lemons. And
wait, 24 Hours of what?
Lemons, not Le Mans. Uh-huh. It's a little play on words there. Lemons, as in beaters, as in junky cars. Yeah, so we're trying to find ourselves a great hunk of junk for $500 because a race car can't cost more than that. And it's got to last approximately 24 hours of racing.
So if anybody out there has a F-body for $500, give us a ring. Let us know.
We'll put you in touch with Micah here.
Please do. Please do.
$500 and it's got to run for 24 hours. I have a hard time finding a car that's $500 that runs at all.
Right.
You know? Yeah.
So that sounds pretty good. In all seriousness, if anybody out there does have a car that they would be willing to part with for $500 that runs and 24 hours. Come on.
24 hours.
Yeah. Good dented, luck, man. Rusted, nasty as hell looking, even better.
That means it's got character.
Exactly. That's what we're looking for here.
Oh, man. That should be interesting.
It's all about memories. You know, that's my philosophy for life is, you know, life is about collecting memories, not things and money. And so this event is going to create a lot of memories. Working on the Camaro has created a lot of memories for me. It's just great. You know, it just keeps on coming.
Well, that's cool. So we talked in the last episode about how you've never owned a Camaro before, and you don't currently have one now. Mm-hmm. However, you did say that you are going to buy another one.
Yes.
Or your first, I should say. What color will the exterior be?
You know, I keep on envisioning this black demon stealth car. You know, every time I see the fourth-gen car in black with black wheels and, like, the red bow tie on it, I'm like, that is just the most badass car. And so I just picture, you know, this fifth-gen car, black wheels. Hopefully there'll be a good black wheel with a red stripe on it. That's kind of my look. So I keep envisioning this really dark, mean-looking car. But then I see the catalog of colors and stripes that are going to be available. And how do I say it? Basically, I tend to be a shoo-in for bright colors sometimes. So, we'll see what happens. You know, I may go over the more expressive, outrageous route.
Puce?
Oh, gosh.
What color interior would you get?
Now,
this is a tough one for you because you got to pick the one that you like the most that you envisioned from the start, essentially.
Right, yeah.
I mean, I'm sure that when you started on this is what you pictured when you were laying the pen to the paper is probably, and I'm going to assume, correct me if I'm wrong, that this is what you were envisioning you would drive.
Yeah. So, definitely what I want to see, what I want to drive. You know, pretty much I'm trying to think of each show car was a two-tone interior. Not really. The coupe was just kind of all black with, like, the copper-colored panels, while the convertible is a two-tone. You know, we'll see. You know, I don't really like all black interiors. I like to have some color in there. So I think I can go a more colorful route.
Puce?
Puce.
Black with puce. Sounds like an appealing color, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Personally, I like the interior that's in the coupe. Just the way it is. Those seats. And then what it had, like the orange piping?
The orange piping.
On it?
Yeah,
even
the
door
stitch.
Panels were all, everything was orange, right?
And was that you as well, Micah?
What's that?
With the piping on the seats, was that you too?
The stitching? Yeah, I definitely wanted to have some real subtle accent color stitching on there to give it more of a handcrafted look to it, and we show off the lines of the seat too. I mean, mm-hmm. The seats are one of my favorite parts of the design. I think they came out really, really good. The shapes are great. The trim job by our in-house trimmer Bob King, he's the man.
We know you're listening, Bob.
Yeah, and Chris Athman too. He did a great job too. So, yeah.
Well, you guys as a team, exterior and interior, did a phenomenal job. We can't say enough good things about it. We've been fortunate to drive them. We sat in the seats. We love the seats for being a concept car. I mean, everything is coming together so nicely. I can't wait to see what the production version is. And
everybody can't wait.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely got to be proud of yourself for being a part of this car that's just going to be huge.
I am. It's really an honor. You know, every time I go to a car show, I see how people are celebrating and practically worshiping their classic cars. And I think that I was such a big part of such a collectible and historic car, historic car's legacy is really just an honor. It's great.
Well, it's an honor to have you here with us.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
To do this interview. And you can come back and talk to us anytime you like. And I think that's going to kind of do it. We could talk to you for hours, but we know you got to get home to your wife and kid. And we'll definitely have to have you back sometime. And thank you so much
Absolutely.
For coming in.
Thank you, Micah, very much.
My pleasure. Thanks a lot, Chris and Jason.
All right. We got to wrap it up.
Yep.
This is great. So, I guess tune in next week, everybody, for the usual run of the mill. I mean, it's going to be kind of boring after this, but maybe we'll have a few more special guests in the future. You never know.
Absolutely.
So, we'll be back next week.
Take it easy.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to the Camaro Z28.com podcast.
If you have questions or comments for Chris and Jason, call our voicemail hotline, 586-486-3182. Or send your comments by email, webmasters@CamaroZ28.com. Once again, thank you for listening to Camaro Z28.com podcast. We'll see you next week.